Welcome to the Mug Meetings Summaries Podcast. I'm Adam Thompson. Gilbert Dutilleux presented our main topic at the November meeting, a demo of WordPress and PodPress.
Our presentation tonight is blogging and podcasting with WordPress and PodPress, with Gilbert Dutilleux presenting. Gilbert.
Thank you, Adam. I'm going to start this presentation with a little bit of a disclaimer. I kind of stumbled into this topic area. I'm not really an expert on blogging or podcasting. And in the interest of full disclosure, I really don't like blogs. I really am not into this whole social networking type of stuff, and
But it's a great deal, because in the last year I made $8,000 writing WordPress plugins. Wow. I don't have a blog myself. $8,000 writing WordPress plugins and moving WordPress stuff around, helping people with their WordPress.
Really?
Wow. I even went to Northern Voice, the conference. I got clients there. Made people willing to pay me. Ooh, these guys are rich. Sin, I don't make money.
So I'm not in it for the money either, so you might be wondering.
You're going to keep your day job.
Why
right?
am I here talking about this? Well, as I said, I kind of stumbled into it, and actually the person who's responsible for that is not here tonight.
He's at a concert. He's singing at a concert.
All of this came about after... Brian Doob actually did the presentation in May on podcasting, and just as an aside, after doing his presentation, he came over and said, so have you considered setting up a podcast out of these audio captures you're doing of the meeting content? And so I gave him the honest answer. I said, no. But then over the course of the summer, I had some downtime at work, and I thought, well, what would it really take to do this? And is it something that would be worth doing? And up until then, I had been setting things up kind of with just some hand-edited stuff on the website, and that was getting a little tedious to do. So I decided to investigate the software that that Brian had recommended and see if this would be easy. So my main goal was basically to do podcasting in a way that involved the least hassle possible. So I needed something that would support RSS and, you know, iTunes, and would make it very easy to post the blog postings and the media files to set up the podcast. And I figured, as long as I'm looking at this, I have other criteria I'm interested in. Obviously, I want the software itself to be simple to install and to maintain. I didn't want more of a hassle with maintaining the website than I already had. And also didn't want to have to deal with licensing issues. And, well, what comes right down to it, I'm just cheap when it comes to this. So free is always better. And, of course, I wanted something that's reliable and well-supported. Again, goes back to the point about easy to install and maintain. And I figured, as long as I'm setting this up, I might want to look into some software that would make it easy to set up multiple blogs in case there was interest in that sort of thing. So multi-user and multi-site support. So let's just see how the WordPress software compares on that checklist I just had. Well, easy to install and maintain. They claim to have a 5-minute installation, and we'll put that to the test. So they also say it's easy to install and to upgrade plugins, and I can assert that that is true. And all the admin tasks, once you've set up the software, can be done via the web interface. So there isn't a huge learning curve to getting going on this. It is open source, so that was good. A quote from their website is, it's both free and priceless at the same time. It is reliable and well-supported. They're currently in version 3.01. It's been around for probably well over 10 years. Sean Walbridge actually had written about it in a Mudlines issue going back to, I think, 2003 or 2004. And I think they were still in version 1.something at that point. And so, yeah, it's been around for a while, and it's fairly stable now. It does have multi-user and multi-site support. Multi-site takes a little bit of tweaking. You have to hand-edit some config files and that sort of thing, but it's not too onerous a task. And back to my main goal, to set up a podcast. WordPress itself doesn't have all the hooks in it to do that, but it turns out it has this great plugin mechanism that Ellen was alluding to before, and it turns out there's a great little plugin that Brian Duke had recommended that goes along with WordPress called PodPress. So what does PodPress give you? It gives you automatic feed generation. It supports RSS, iTunes, and also can generate these XSPF playlists, which are useful for the little media player that comes with it. It's a little Flash applet. In addition to letting you post the stuff, you can actually maintain stats on your downloads and get little graphs being displayed as a result of that. Adding the podcast content to a post is dead trivial, as I'll show you in a little while. And so basically it provides everything I needed in terms of additions to WordPress in order to do the podcast support. So, the software itself seems pretty easy, but there are a few prerequisites, shall we say, that might be a little bit more involved. Obviously, you need a web server to begin with. That's not a problem. We had a web server already set up on the Mug system. You need PHP and MySQL. These are the versions they recommend. After a little bit of experimenting, I discovered that for PHP, version 5.2 or greater would actually work better. I think we've got 5.1 on the Mug server right now, and there's one little thing that isn't quite supported with date formats, but that's a minor irritant. And if you're going to use multi-site support or a non-default permalinks support, you also need the Apache mod rewrite module. And I'll talk a little bit more about permalinks when I'm doing the demo, in case you're wondering what the heck a permalink is. Also a quote from their website, software that's not required but recommended for better security, it is something called SUPHP, which comes with a module called mod SUPHP. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second. And then my own little mention at the bottom. Oh, yeah, they do mention it on their website as well. Unless you're a MySQL guru, I would highly recommend you use some sort of GUI front end for doing your database management. And PHP MyAdmin is a slick little utility for doing that. Okay, I talked about multi-site support. It's also referred to as network support. Essentially, what it is allowing you with one copy of the software installed to maintain multiple blogs on the one site. And before version 3 of WordPress, it used to involve a code fork. There was a different version called WordPress MU, and the MU actually, the MU stood for multi-user, which is a bit of a misnomer because it was actually multi-site as opposed to multi-user. WordPress, even in its native form, was multi-user. You could have multiple users maintaining the single blog. But since version 3.0, the multi-site support is built in. As I mentioned earlier, it does take a little bit of hand tweaking to some config files. And any of the admin tasks you do typically have to be repeated using the web interface for each of the blogs you set up. So it's a little bit more tedious. That's about all I'm going to say about multi-site support. It's kind of beyond the scope of tonight's presentation. But here's the URL on their site for more information on how to set that up. Okay, I mentioned they have this brag about the 5-minute install. When you look at their install instructions for the 5-minute install, these are essentially the steps they give you. So about 6 steps. The install is actually can be a little simpler than what they recommend here, and I'll show you as I do the install. Some of this stuff that they recommend doing by hand, you can actually do through the web browser as long as it has write access to the directory where you've installed the software. The one thing I did want to point out about this, I'm not going to go through all the steps now because I'll do that in the demo. But there's kind of 2 ways you can install it. One is you can set up WordPress to support the entire root of the domain. So in other words, it's kind of taking over the whole website. Or you can set it up in a subdirectory, such as blog. Yep.
Can you change that after the fact?
Yes, you can.
You can.
Yes, you can, but
you have to update the MySQL database, that's it.
No, you have to update the config files.
I remember doing
config files and the database, and yeah, there be dragons this way. Unlike in MediaWiki, where you change one variable in a config file and you can move it to a different directory, here the name that you pick appears everywhere, and so I've had to do it once where I renamed it after the fact, and. In retrospect, it would have been simpler to just reinstall from scratch. Yeah. So unless you've got a lot of content already set up and you really don't want to reinstall from scratch, I would recommend pick your subdirectory carefully and don't change it after.
5 minutes.
Yeah, so the install so far seems pretty easy, but I did mention there are prerequisites. Some of them are a little more complicated, and you'll probably spend much more than 5 minutes on that. Also, the 5 minutes gives you basically just the basic install of the software. Pretty much all the setup you do after that is point and click through the web interface, which is fairly slick and it's fairly easy to do, but it's a little bit more time consuming. So you're going to spend a lot of time, a lot more than 5 minutes anyway, on post-install configuration and tweaking the appearance of it. Multi-site support, as I mentioned, is a little more involved, so don't count that in the 5 minutes. Also, one of their recommendations was this SUPHP. It's a slick little utility, but it's very, very poorly documented. And some of the sample config files are either out of date or they're just plain wrong. I haven't quite decided which it is. But I spent probably well over a day just trying to figure out how to get that going. Yeah. I mean, a work day, not 24 hours, but... Yeah. And then there's this whole triple W thing. Which leads me to my second warning of the evening.
Oh, God.
I hadn't even heard of these guys before. When I installed this software, I just had one of those moments where I feel... Am I the only person who doesn't know about this? Fortunately, I'd played around with WordPress 2 before where the silently wasn't quite so silent. So there was actually a little warning in the installation about this. In WordPress 3, it doesn't tell you this, but it still seems to enforce the same policy. I don't know. Has anyone heard about these guys?
No.
Okay.
I've heard of the idea.
They seem kind of slightly cultish, and their mission in life seems to be to rid the world of the scourge of the triple W prefix. And unfortunately, the authors of WordPress have bought into this conspiracy. So I guess when I went to install it on the Mug server, it saw that you can use muug.md.ca, and it goes to the same site as triple W. So it insists on stripping off the triple W prefix on everything. That, unfortunately, broke my existing web server configuration, which was set up to actually try to map if someone comes to the website using any of the other aliases, since I didn't want them appearing multiple times in search engines, which I had come across that problem before. So I was mapping everything that was coming in with a non-canonical host name to use the triple W prefix instead. And so the two essentially got into rewrite wars with each other. So, yeah, so that means you may be in for a little bit of ugliness there. So, getting back to SUPHP, you may be wondering what that is. Any of you familiar with SUExec, with the Apache web server? Yeah, okay. SUPHP is essentially a little plugin module that does for PHP code what SUExec does for regular CGIs. So, essentially, what it lets you do is run them under the user ID of the owner of the script. So if you're running a site that has multiple users, each owning their own PHP code, they can each run their scripts under their own user ID instead of under the user ID of the Apache web server. So a slick little feature, which might be useful, and I thought it would be useful on the mug server. Yeah. SU, yeah. And there's a config file for each of the two parts. There's the module that ties into Apache, and then there's the setuid root binary. And as I mentioned earlier, these are not very well documented. So I'm going to save you a little bit of time and tell you, if you want to use SUExec, these are the tweaks you need. Unfortunately, the red doesn't show up very well here.
So, Gilbert, this might be possible then if you're running your WordPress on another on an ISP.
To do this?
Yeah.
But probably wouldn't
that depends. Like some ISPs may actually have this in place already for that reason, so that people can run their own PHP code under their own user ID. But yeah, I mean, this is something you have to install on the Apache web server, and as I said, there's a setuid root binary, so if the site isn't already supporting it, they likely won't. But if it's a site that's already letting you run PHP,
yeah, they got something built in.
Then you should be able to run WordPress like any other PHP code.
Yeah.
What's the advantages of running it under your own user ID?
It just makes it easier for ownership of files and permissions. Essentially,
WordPress?
You own all the files, and your PHP code is going to run under your user ID. So you can set up the files as securely as you need to. So only your user ID has access to particular files, and they don't have to be world readable, for instance. Okay. So, like I was thinking, for us at the university, not so much for the mug site, which is a pretty limited base of users that actually have login access on the server. But this is something I was interested in, and this is why I could justify spending a day of my work time on it, is we have students doing PHP code on a test web server we've got. And when I set that up initially, I didn't even know about SUPHP. So this was a real find for me, because now it lets us set that up so that the students are running their PHP code under their own user ID rather than making the whole web server potentially more vulnerable.
Or other people's assignments.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and this is where the whole issue of read permissions comes in. Now, the students can lock down their stuff so that other students can't snoop at their files because they all happen to be world readable.
Right. Or if, in this case, Apache is running as the HTTP user, so you can have a little PHP script with, you know, cats and other users' home folder, and puts that output on the screen, because you're running it as an escalated privileged account. Okay. This gets around that by saying you can only touch your stuff, as opposed to anything that the web server can see.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So anyway, one of the two config files, the main thing you're going to have to do is go in and find any variable setting like that that has a colon in the string, and put double quotes around it. those quotes were missing in the sample file. And this is where I don't know if it's just plain wrong or if something changed somewhere along the lines in the way they parse these strings. But it turns out that without the quotes, it basically stops the assignment at the colon. So these things down here were just screwed up completely. And this one I discovered later, once I got the others working, that without the quotes, my path was missing some components. So you'll want to do that. The other thing you're going to want to do is add the minus CGI here, because contrary to what they say in their example, the version of PHP you actually need to run there is the CGI. Otherwise, you get the dreaded obscure Apache message about premature end of script headers. That was the fix for that. And the only other change I made, and this is kind of optional, but depending on where you're going to set this up and where your files are going to be, in my case, it made no sense to actually have the plugin, or rather SUPHP, check to make sure that files are within the document root, because most of the files that would be run under SUPHP would not be in the document root. So that's why I set that to false. Now, the other file is the one for the Apache module itself. They give you a sample, and the sample mostly consists of this line to load the module and a couple lines like these. The stuff in red is what I added to do something that, depending on who you believe on the web, is either very insecure or will make your web server unreliable or can't be done. And that was... that was to try and get mod SUPHP and mod PHP 5, which is the module to have PHP support built into Apache, to get them to coexist on the same site. And so the idea here is I wanted, for any of the home directory files that belong to other users, I want to run them through mod SUPHP. For anything that's under the document root, I want to run it under mod PHP, so that I can take advantage of efficiencies like PHP accelerators and things like that. So, after finding one site that had it kind of right on how to do this, basically this is what I came up with as a sort of a minimal sequence of commands to do it. So just put these commands here within directory section, matching the path you want for the people that are going to run their PHP through SUPHP. So here I'm doing it for all of /home. This one basically just turns the engine on. This one sets up the handler. This one I've got in red because some of the examples you find on the web use add type instead, which is just plain wrong. And they tell you to use a mime type over here. That's also wrong. It's basically just a string for identifying the handler, and you want to make sure the string that you use agrees in those two places. Okay? And then, so if you're going to use SUPHP, you then want to do this part to turn off the built-in PHP engine so that they don't conflict. And there is all I needed to do to get the two to coexist on the same server. And until someone can prove to me otherwise that this really is a bad idea because it makes the web server unreliable, I haven't had any problems with that, or that it's for some reason opening up a security hole, this seems to make sense to me.
The problem there is the handlers. The order that they're evaluated isn't deterministic, which is the problem.
Well, it is deterministic in the setup on Red Hat-ish systems because it goes through the list of config files alphabetically. So you just have to make sure that those are set up correctly.
Because I can see an instance where backwards that the Apache would just fall over.
Yeah.
But in that particular order,
you're right.
That
sequence
works.
Does matter here. Yeah.
In any event, you can simply give it a different handler name.
Mm-hmm. Like PHP.
Yeah, that could be AXHTTPD, SUPHP, and that would avoid conflict altogether, would it not?
It would avoid the conflict, but the problem with that is you'd have to tell all the users to change their extension. Like, all the code would have to, like, the handler goes, the extension of the file is in .php. If you change it to .phpc, right?
You're saying add handler is not a contextful operator in Apache config?
Don't think so.
Gotcha.
It is. Yeah, it's like this will add the handler for paths that match this. The other add handler that you had in another config file to use this, that still applies for everything outside of this directory. Yeah. And in fact, this, as I said, is kind of the minimal sequence I needed to get the two to coexist. On the MUG server, I've actually got other directory sections after here that handle exceptions to this. And so you can kind of switch back and forth between them. So, like, I've got another directory section here after that. Kind of, it says, yeah, okay, you've done this, but now for certain things, go back and do it the other way. So I actually kind of undo this, I turn the engine off, and I go back to using the built-in PHP. So it's ugly, but it works.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So what happens if your PHP code includes a file from a different directory space? What set of rules is in place?
Whichever one the base URL invoked.
Yeah, that's not entirely clear from this, but I've set this up so that it can work regardless of whether you've got mod.php going or not.
Okay.
But this kind of presumes that earlier in the config, before this, there was some other setup that loaded mod.php 5 and did the add handler to point PHP files over to mod.php.
So if you do an include of a file using this full directory path, you're still working under the directory home rules because the initiating PHP file that invoked the handler is a set of rules we're under.
Yeah, well, this config file is only seen by the Apache server itself, right? So once a control is given over to PHP, either the PHP that's built in to Apache through the module or the external PHP that's invoked through SUPHP, they can do includes to their heart's content, and it doesn't change anything because Apache's not looking at those paths anymore.
So if that's just include somebody else's code, I get to run it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this a PHP version of server-side includes?
No, it's actually SUPHP is a version of a PHP safe mode that used to exist back in 4 and got deprecated because it didn't work. And it's another way to try and get around it.
Yes and no. Safe mode didn't do anything about changing user IDs.
No.
It just put certain restrictions on
it. It was intended to prevent you from running the other guy's code.
Yeah.
And it didn't work real well.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so SUPHP serves a slightly different function, and that is, as I mentioned earlier, is to allow the code to run under...
rather than restrictive.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's basically a way of extending set UID bits into the web server space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to speak.
Sort of. To give you that kind of equivalent functionality.
Can you use groups? SUPHP?
No. It only goes according to the user ID. It expects the file to, well, obviously to match your user ID, but it will expect the group permission on the file to match your primary group. And it will only run it under those conditions. Similar to what SUExec does. There's all kinds of tests it does just to make sure people aren't trying to cheat the rules. And so you can't use alternate groups. It only sets your user ID and your primary group ID. Okay? I didn't want to spend the whole evening on SUPHP. We've gotten this far, and I really haven't said a whole lot yet about WordPress itself or PodPress, and that's because the best way to really show it is through a demo. And so I'm going to go through a demo, which is going to consist of three main tasks. One is we're going to put that 5-minute install to the test. Interesting little sidebar there. Just a a little while before getting married, I was getting my house ready to sell, and my future father-in-law, who is affectionately known by certain people as Chainsaw Ed, helping me clear some of the excess vegetation in my yard. And I had this globe cedar in the front yard that was really just overgrown, and it was encroaching on the sidewalk. And we decided it wasn't going to work to prune it. So I just told him, yeah, just get rid of it. So he puts down his safety goggles, and just before firing up the chainsaw says, 5 minutes, tie me, starts up the chainsaw. So, yeah, so I'm inviting you to tie me to see if I can keep it to 5 minutes.
Done.
But just like Chainsaw Ed did the job in 5 minutes, but left a lot of debris that took about half an hour to pile up and take haul away, the 5 minute install only takes us so far. There will be admin tasks. So I'm going to do basically three sort of main categories of admin tasks. One is to show you how to install plugins, in particular the PodPress plugin, how to do upgrades. I'm going to show some basic WordPress configuration tasks and configuring PodPress itself. And then finally, we'll post an article, which should hopefully be the end of the demo. Can everyone read the bottom line there? Yeah. Hopefully. Oops.
Pat.
Let's try that again. So I'm just going to log into the Mug server. And first things, I'm just going to go over to my own user ID's public HTML directory. And just some stuff. Just wanted to make sure it was clean here. Okay, so first step is you fetch the software. And it comes in two flavors. You just go to wordpress.org and you can download latest.tar.gz or latest.zip. And either one of those gets you the latest version of the software. Is someone timing me?
Yes.
All right.
As soon as you logged in.
Yep. Well, I have 28, actually. Yeah.
You extract the software. And so now we should see a directory called WordPress from July 29th. That wasn't there before. And I'm going to just move that to blog. Because that's what I want to call it. And from here on, I'm just going to go over to the blog directory. And there's tons of files in there. In their instructions for the 5 minute install, they say, take this sample file, move it over here, and all of that. But it turns out, since all of this stuff is running under my own user ID, thanks to SUPHP, all I really need is to go to the website. And just to show you, up until now, that was not found, but it should be found now. Yeah, and it starts with this little warning message that you don't have a config file yet. So I just tell it, that's okay, go ahead and create one. All right, then what it wants is a database name, username, password, and host, and all of that is just so that it can connect you to the database. So before I go any further than this, I'm going to need to get into here. This is PHP MyAdmin, which is just a web-based front end to... Oops. Once I remember the password... Strange. Yeah, I'm going to go in here to create.
What's your dog's name?
Oh, So apparently the 5 minutes can be exceeded when you can't remember your password.
This was working just yesterday. I walked through all of this.
Any caps lock key or anything stupid like that?
Well, that's what I'm looking for, and no.
Try retyping root, make sure you don't have
spaces. I did that.
Or something.
Yeah.
No, you don't. That's good. That's a MySQL error, all right.
Is it the local host thing? Is your
nope, no, that should be fine.
Okay. 2 minutes.
TikTok.
Murphy's Law, 5 minute installs.
MySQL cause mess.
No, 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 no.
Murphy's Law. It always takes 10 times.
The probability of something going wrong on any demo. Is n log n, where n is the number of observers.
What? Oh.
Nice old D, I think.
Yeah. I'm just gonna.
Thank you.
What?
Okay. I'm in.
You should try that out.
You had a saved PHP session ID in the.
Could
URL.
Be. Could. Oh, okay. It was using the old session ID or something. All right. So I'm in. Sorry for that little.
Start the clock.
Yeah. All right. So I'm just going to go into privileges here and add a new user. I'm going to tell it to create a database with the same name and grant all privileges. And I believe that's all I need. I don't need any of the global privileges set for this user ID. So once that user ID is set up, that's all that WordPress is going to need is that one user ID and that one database. Okay, so it's been set up. And now I should be able to just go back to where I was here and say, let's go. All right. And it even is helpful here and gives you defaults, but of course I've set up different things. So my database name is my user ID, and the username is the same, and password. Oh yeah, there's one little caveat here, is that password actually shows up, but that's okay. I've just picked a particularly insecure password. Maybe if I spelt it backwards, it would be more secure. And yeah,
I missed that detail.
So now it's set up the config file, and I can say go ahead and run the install.
Are you sure?
Okay. So. So now you just go through another screen and put in some of the information for configuring WordPress. So I'm just calling the thing Podcast Emporium. I'm giving it, it recommended admin as the default username for the site administrator. I'm just going to use my own user ID. And here I'm going to use my famous secure password that I had just... Hang on. Make sure I get it right.
One, two, three, four, five.
And it's warning me it's a weak password, as if I didn't know that. And that's really all there is. And at this point, we can tell it to install WordPress. And it's going to chug away for a while. And here we are. Success! WordPress has been installed. Were you expecting more steps? Sorry to disappoint. And so at this point, you can actually log into your brand new blog. Said. There we go. Yeah. So now it takes us into the admin interface, starting with what they call the dashboard, which is like just a one screen sort of synopsis of what's going on with your blog site. And so then we're going to proceed with a whole bunch of the other configuration, but I think at this point, we're almost ready to stop the clock. There's just one more thing I need to do. You'll notice that the wp-config file it set up is world-readable, and it has that very secure password of mine, so I don't want that. So, oops. So, I'm just going to turn off group and other permissions on that file. There, now it's nice and secure. And that's it. How long did that take me? Probably more than 5 minutes.
I stopped and you were done at 8 minutes and 42 seconds.
Okay.
Still pretty good.
Yeah. Had it not been for the little hiccup with PHP MyAdmin, I would have done it in under 5 minutes.
Now, on the off chance no one has spotted the glaring security error, you do want to do this all at once. Do not install the blog and go for lunch.
Yeah.
Because the first person to come in, that web address gets control of everything. So it's an atomic operation. Do not pass go and not collect to anything.
One thing, you had said that in background tries to get rid of the www
yet.
Yes.
Now, you have the www up there.
Mm-hmm.
Given that it will break web theory, couldn't it be at least 5 minutes to possibly more than 2 days?
Well, yeah, I did warn you about that earlier. Yes, in fact, I had spent quite a long time on that particular problem as well as the SUPHP problem. That's why I had those warnings about that.
So a new user would come in, and they would end up having...
Yeah.
So it's not really a 5 minute...
No, but that was because Gilbert was doing rewrites on domain names, which the average user wouldn't be doing. So it was because he was being cutesy or smart to rewrite everything into WWW.
Yeah. We were both doing rewrites in ways that were philosophically incompatible, shall we say. Yeah, so that's not something that the average user is likely to encounter. But... yeah, take the 5 minute install with a grain of salt. All things being equal, it should be about a 5 minute install. But there is always the potential to run into weird problems.
I just installed WordPress and set it up on the site. Okay, 5 minute install and 2 weeks of tinkering.
Yeah.
It's somewhat irrelevant.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to try and do it in less than 2 weeks of tinkering, but we'll try and do about half an hour of tinkering to the website here, at most. Half an hour, and we should be at a point where we can do our post. So here's basically the admin interface, as I pointed out. And along the left-hand side, there's this toolbar that lets you do all your operations. And so there are things you can control, like the appearance. There are themes, for instance. So here's our current theme that's set up, and the list of available themes right now is empty, but you can actually go through and right through the web interface, you can pick different themes to install. And you can either pick it by search term or by its name if you happen to know what you're looking for. Or you can pick a set of features from this menu, and then it'll try to find themes that match those features. Word of caution about this is don't be too picky, because if you pick too many of these features, you're likely to end up with the empty set. So just start with like one or two features. So for instance, most of the default themes start with a sidebar that's on the right-hand side, which I haven't shown you that yet, but you will see that. Actually, you can sort of see it. Never mind.
Why don't you open as is in another window, so you can see what the actual site looks like.
Just by clicking on the title at the top of the admin interface, it actually takes you to the site. So you can do that at any point. You can see, okay, what does it look like now? So here's what's set up totally by default. Okay, so there's this sidebar here on the right. So what I was getting at is, say you tend to prefer sidebars on the left. Well, you might want to look for themes that have sidebars on the left. Oh, and you find some seasonal ones and, oh, a medieval one. WordPress test site. This one looks a little too Twitterish for my liking.
Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I'd pick that, but I'd be afraid it would ruin my site.
Well, you got that.
That was a bad pun. I'm glad everyone missed it.
Ruin my
site. Yeah. Anyway, the next thing I wanted to show you. Oh yeah, you can go in and tweak menus. You can set up menus that have links to other pages or other parts of your blog and things like that. And it turns out you can actually use this as a content management system. That came up in the roundtable last month. It's not necessarily as full-featured as a CMS like Drupal would be. But yeah, you can set up entire websites and manage all the content through WordPress. So you can set up menus and you can set up web pages. You can pick background graphics or change the background color. So here's where you'd upload a custom image. Or you can just pick your favorite background color. It doesn't really show up as very different on here, but anyway.
We have to go back to the site to see how it looks because you're still in the admin thing.
Oh, yeah, but no, it shows it in this box here. Yeah, this preview. It would show the graphic if you had uploaded it, okay. But it also, as you type in the color, it was actually changing the color in the preview. You can also change the header. And again, you can pick a different graphic. Like, you might not like this little pastoral scene. You might want something a little more edgy. So here, this says blogging to me more. It's maybe something about the ink blots. I don't know. So I'm going to set that one up. And, well, yeah, there's actually a little editor in here. Yeah, exactly. You can go in and you can change your style sheets and things like that. I'm not going to do any of that. But let's just take a quick look and see what our site looks like now. Okay, so there's the new graphic. And, well, we still have this white background, but you'll notice around the edges, you might not notice it here, but I've got kind of a beigeish background color behind that. And I haven't done anything really to change the sidebar yet. You'll see there's these sort of default things that are in the sidebar, and I might want to change those around. So let's go back and...
Does Function Key 11 make this browser go full screen?
No, unfortunately not on the Mac. Yeah. Okay. So that's it for the appearance section. One of the sections I did want to go through here is the plugins section. And you'll notice there is this little one that showed up in a circle there. That's to tell us that we've actually got an update available. And if we look over here, We'll see. Upgrade available one. And if we go to that, we'll see. Oh, okay. Akismet is a plugin that just came along for the ride as part of the install of WordPress. And there's already an update available for it. So we can say that we want to select that. And under bulk actions, we can say upgrade. And we can apply. So there's basically what it did. And so it automatically fetched the zip file, unpacked it, installed it in the directory, removed the old version, and there you go.
Can WordPress upgrade its own core files?
Yes, it can. Actually, if I went to...
It will actually nag you if you need...
Is it under the dashboard? Oh, yes.
Version numbers and goes back.
Yeah.
Says, please update me.
Under dashboard updates. Okay, there was a one there that was actually old, and it was the update for the plugin. But this says you have the latest version of WordPress. You can reinstall it if you want, or you could, if there were an update, you could just go through a procedure just like I did. And now it's saying the plugins are all up to date, but had I gone to this screen earlier, you would have seen that there was a plugin available for Akismet. But let's go back to our plugin screen. And what we want to do now is we want to look for a different plugin. So we'll say add new. And again, you can just search here. There's a list of popular tags if you want to just pick one of those. Or you can just type in a search keyword. And so I'll put in podcast and get that search going. And so, if you want plugins for doing podcasts, it turns out there's a whole bunch of them. Oh, look at this. There's one called Buzzsprout. Oh, 5-star rating. Blueberry PowerPress podcast plugin, 4.5 stars. Oh, another 5-star one. Another 5-star one. And another one. And way down the list, we get to...
Size?
Eventually, there's PodPress, only 3 stars. There's popular opinion for you. Anyway, so that's the one I want. And so I say install it. And it goes through similar procedure here. It unpacks it and installs it. And so it's in there. But all these plugins, like you can install plugins until the cows come home, but by default, when they're installed, they're not doing anything. You have to then activate them and configure them for them to be useful. So I'm going to go in now, and I'm going to activate PodPress. So there it is. It shows it activated, and it shows up in my list of other plugins. And the other thing you'll notice is now there's a new little section on the left-hand sidebar. If I go to that, I can now do the configuration for PodPress. And there's tons of different settings here. One thing it's asking for here is an iTunes feed ID. This is only applicable once you've registered a podcast with iTunes. Eventually, after about a week or more, they send you back a confirmation email saying that they've registered it, and the email contains a feed ID. And so you can plug that into here so that PodPress knows about it. But right now we haven't registered this, so we've got no feed ID to put in. There's this little summary thing. iTunes has a whole bunch of extra keywords that'll appear in the RSS feed that are iTunes specific. And one of those is a summary. So you can put in something here. It shows this just by default.
No kidding.
And there's also the blog tagline, and that is actually something that shows up at the top.
You didn't get
that
from Brian, did you?
No. No.
This is not my father's podcast.
Right.
Forget to add holla at the end.
So I'll just make them a little different so you can see later where one appears versus the other. There's also these image tags that you can set up. And by default, it gives you this cute little Mighty Mouse logo. But they also tell you here, there are a couple different facts that are on the Apple site that are of slightly different vintages, and one of them recommends a 600 by 600 pixel image. The other fact, which is a little older, recommends a 300 by 300 pixel image. So, yeah, it's kind of a moving target. But one thing that both of those facts seem to agree on is that if your podcast is to be noticed at all, and if you don't want to be treated like total slime, you really need a custom graphic image for that. Mm-hmm. So let's set one up. Is. And you can see that it updates the preview right away. And likewise over here, we've got one in a smaller version. Oops. Yeah, so I've got those. It's also asking for an author or owner. I'll just put my own name here and the email address it filled in from a WordPress setting. You can put in keywords if you want, and a subtitle. This is a subtitle that'll be used for the episode, but you can let it take that information from other information in your postings. So I just leave these blank. One thing you will probably want before you go to register your podcast, though, is a category, because otherwise it tends to pick default categories that are probably not what you expected. So I'm just going to pick technology, and then I'm going to pick a subcategory here under technology. Well, this is kind of a software how-to I'm doing, so let's do that. iTunes explicit. Well, everyone's been on their best behavior tonight, so I don't think we need the explicit warning on here. And yeah. There's a whole bunch of other settings, but I think those are really the only ones I've worried about. Oh, I think here I think I changed that slightly. Yeah. Just put in my name. If you want to do it through Creative Commons, you can put a URL to the copyright text and so on.
What?
Check.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I never bothered with that. So that's pretty much all you need for the general options for PodPress. Oh yeah, when you do update any of the screens within WordPress, typically somewhere at the bottom of that screen there's a save button. Make sure you do that before you go to another screen, because otherwise you'll just lose your settings. Okay, so that was feed iTunes settings. Let's just look at the general settings quickly. There's not really much we need to worry about here, except if we wanted to enable statistics, this is where we would do it. Ah, but it says, warning, it appears you're not using WordPress permalinks. Remember I mentioned permalinks earlier. So here's where you would go to set your permalinks. And by default, WordPress just uses the path that you had, and then it uses question marks and P equals for the post ID. But a lot of people like having these slash paths with the date or the date and some other information. And all of these require rewrites, actually, to be implemented. And WordPress does this through the Apache mod rewrite module. So anytime you pick anything other than the default permalink format, you need to have mod rewrite, and you need a .ht access file set up with that. So let's just say we want to go with this format here. And let's save our changes. Oh, okay. Something funny just happened there, which I was entirely expecting. So I'm feigning surprise here. Let's go back and look at our directory listing. And lo and behold, it created an .ht access file and thought, oh, this time I'm not going to make it world writable. I'm going to make it nice and secure. So secure, in fact, that the web server can't access it. So. So I'm just going to make that file world readable. There's nothing really confidential in there. I'll just show you, in fact, what it contains. There it is. It's basically just a bunch of rewrite rules, which are a little cryptic, but essentially that is what lets it implement the permalinks structure that I asked for.
A cursive backslash character.
All right, so that's that. Let's go back to our web browser. And if we reload this page now, everything's back to normal. So yeah, I thought it would be useful to go through that because it caught me by surprise the first time, and it's something that might catch you by surprise too if you're not expecting that. There's also this little built-in Flash player that PodPress embeds in your postings, in the web pages for your postings. And so this is just a whole bunch of settings for that. And I don't think I've ever bothered to really change anything there.
Does it tolerate sustained play while you click around anything below that might be different? Obscure question. No need to go deep into it.
No, basically if you click on anything that takes you to another page, it's like any other Flash plugin. It's only active while that page is being displayed. Yeah. So if you click any link that takes you to a different page, then it's going to stop playing. But of course, you can open other pages in other tabs or in other windows and keep that window active.
You have to be careful to write the text that goes with any important music, to write the text slowly.
Okay, let's just see what we've got now. Okay, so there's my little tagline has changed. And as we can see, nothing's changed yet to our toolbar here on the sidebar on the right. And yeah, so let's just go back. We'll do a little bit more tweaking. I do plan to wrap this up in the next 10 minutes. Oh yeah, settings. I don't think I went through all of these yet.
This is all writing the CSS file.
Pardon me?
All writing the CSS?
No, it's mostly writing this. All of these updates you're doing are being written into the database.
Well, I was thinking like formats and all this.
Yeah, formats are in the CSS files, but those are static. There is that little editor that lets you go in and you can tweak those CSS files. But it doesn't do updates to that automatically, at least not that I'm aware of. Okay? There's a whole bunch of general settings that you can change here. A lot of them, you're probably going to be happy with the defaults. One of the things, though, that you might want to change is your time zone. We're currently UTC-6, I believe, because we just changed over. And this is the one thing where it would be nice to have PHP 5.2 or newer, is that the time zone handling works better under there. It'll actually do daylight savings time conversions automatically for you. But with older versions of PHP, the daytime functions that are required to support that aren't in there. So the time zone handling is a little bit simple-minded right now. So right now, the way it is on this web server, I have to, twice a year, change the time zone manually.
Actually, I was just going to mention this to Gilbert later, but probably he's not the only one running into this. On CentOS, to get PHP 5.2, it's in the repositories. You have to pull it from the CentOS 5 testing repository.
Uh-huh.
They won't push it into the production repo for backward compatibility reasons.
Right. Okay. I didn't realize it was in testing. Okay. I found a website that described how you could custom build this, and I thought, I'm not going to bother with that. Okay.
So there is a plugin that will handle your time zone for you. It just toggles that back and forth.
Okay.
Each plugin is run every time anybody calls any page.
Right.
So it goes through, and it just takes a look at the type date time and looks at the time zone that you've set.
Okay.
Says, oh, it's daylight saving time, and it changes to UTC minus 5.
Cool.
And then changes it back.
All right. Thank you. That's good to know.
With, you know, 15,
and he gets
$1
commission if you use it.
Yeah.
15 million lines of overhead for that one change twice a year. Go ahead.
Yeah, the only other thing I would change is there's this thing here about which day of the week starts on. For some reason, it's set to Monday. I'd prefer Sunday. This will show up a little later when we set up a calendar. So I'm just going to save those changes. There are settings here that change the way postings will be laid out. One of those is the default post category. And right now, the only category that's defined is uncategorized. I'm going to go and change that in a second.
Secret email account. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. You can actually, it supports something called post via email. Which if for some reason you're somewhere where you have email access but not web access and you desperately need to post an update to your blog, you can do it via email.
Is there a catchword there or anything?
Actually, interesting sidebar there again. I mentioned at the start that I'm not a big fan of blogs. There aren't a lot of blogs I do read. The only one I did read faithfully is one that was written by my wife's cousin, who was blogging while he was doing a stint with Doctors Without Borders. And he was using a post via email feature because that was often in some of these places where they were stationed. That was the only way he could actually do his updates. And we were following these updates, A, because they were very funny and very interesting. And let's see. Oh, yeah, he was posted in a war zone. So it was quite interesting to get updates. And often reading the blog was the only way we were getting updates for him. And oh, let's see what else. Oh, yeah, the country he's in, the government would deny it to this day, but they were basically under house arrest. So we were very concerned for their safety. So if you can match that kind of level of life and death struggle, I might read your blog too. Anyway. So that's writing settings. And there's settings that affect the way the pages will be displayed, and so on. There's tons of things you can change like this. Permalinks we've already looked at. I think that's about all I'm going to show you for settings. But I did, as I said, want to go through this categories business. So, yeah, right now there's only one category called uncategorized. I read somewhere that they recommend you have a category called podcast. So I'm just going to set that up. I'm not going to bother with the description. It's fairly self-evident. So I'm going to add that category. Oh, it is there. Okay, there we go. Yeah. Okay, so there's a podcast category. And now if I go back to, right, the feed iTunes settings, I think I missed that earlier. There was somewhere a default category. It's probably way over on the right-hand side, and so I missed it. Is under general?
I think so.
Okay.
It's there as well. It should be under here somewhere, too.
It should be. I thought everything related to...
Scroll on just a little bit more.
There it is. RSS category. Right. I was explaining the iTunes categories, but there's also this RSS category. And so they usually recommend if you're doing a podcast that you use a category title like podcast for RSS. So I'm just going to update that.
We just saw you type in the properly spelled name podcast as a name for a category. Then we just saw you pick a thing there for RSS. Was that an option that was going to offer anyway, or is it actually the category that you created?
Yeah, it's the category. Well, yeah.
Thank you.
I just typed it in, but it's expecting it to be a category that exists.
So if you spelled it wrong, we would have saw the wrong name spelling offered in that drop-down box.
I think that was just Firefox's office.
Just Firefox filling it in, because I've already walked through this on this browser, so Firefox is remembering my previous settings. Yeah. That wasn't an actual drop-down menu.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah. The question is if you chose to spell the creation of the category with an X on the end for whatever reason, then we would have had to pick the RSS feed, or the type of feed, the category name spelled with the X.
Yeah, the RSS category in this case is just the thing that's going to go in the RSS header. It doesn't have to match a WordPress blog category.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay, I wasn't even clear on that. Thanks for that clarification.
It's the category that when someone fetches your RSS.xml, that's what's going to be in
there. There you go. Okay, thank you. All right. Okay, the one last thing under appearance that I've skipped up until now is widgets. And widgets is what lets you control that sidebar. And so there's a whole bunch of available widgets, and there's different places that you can put them. So the primary widget area over here is that sidebar, and this is where they all are. And these things here, if we were to open those, we'd see that they're currently empty. Okay. So what I can do is, if I don't want that sidebar to be quite so cluttered, I can take things that I'm not interested in, like, I don't care what people have to say. So I'm going to type that down into this ghetto called second footer widget area. And my categories, I'm not really going to do much with categories, so I'll put them down in the footer as well.
One thing, Gilbert, I see you do this drag and drop. When I was, I implemented WordPress last month, and I did it on my own machine initially. It worked with Charm. When I uploaded it to the ISP, everything worked except this drag and drop.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, fuck. I mean, it's not a serious problem, but it makes administration a little painful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was basically because they were running 4.3.
Oh, okay.
PHP.
All right.
I've almost seen that with... plugin that clicks.
That's what they said. And I removed all my plugins. I spent a day. Spent a day trying to figure this out. And I finally said, "Send me the PHP."
Well, I'm assuming that some of this drag and drop support probably uses AJAX on the browser side, but I'm not. I wasn't sure what it required on the server side in terms of functionality.
You should use the Google kit or whatever it is for AJAX. But anyways, I found
that. Okay. So for most of these widgets, you can pop them open, and there's usually some settings that are widget specific. So here, for instance, the categories widget, I just said, instead of showing it as a list, show it as a drop down, and also show a post count with each category. And so then you click save again. I've done that. And things like this. Okay, number of comments. Well, as I said, I'm not that interested in people's comments, so I'm just going to decrease the number it shows just to save some real estate there.
The default doesn't let anybody comment anyways.
Okay. So I'm just going to close that down. So now we've got less in our primary widget area. We've got search, and we've got recent posts, and we've got archives and meta. Yeah, that looks pretty good. Before we go and add other widgets, let's just take a look at what we've got here.
Don't you have to click save at the bottom of that page?
No. You save each widget.
It's all AJAX, so it's all really local.
Yeah. So here's the search that was there. Recent posts, archives, and meta. So that's what I had there. And now the other things, I've relegated them down to the footer area, and you can see my categories now show up in this handy-dandy little pull-down. And there's recent comments. So Yeah, it's a little bit out of the way now, which is what I wanted. Let's go back to our widgets, though, and we'll see. Oh, yeah, there are some other widgets here that I might want, like, for instance, this calendar. I'm going to put the calendar into the secondary widget area.
Well, the widgets themselves will be JavaScript when they render, when you're looking at a page, won't they?
The calendar, there isn't really anything I need to configure. You could put a title. If you don't, it'll just say calendar. The one thing I did want to show is there's a couple useful PodPress-related widgets that get added when you put in the PodPress plugin. One is this XSPF player, which I'm also going to put in the secondary widget area. And I'll say, yeah, I use the Slim player because I'm concerned about real estate again. And I wish I had a bigger screen here because dragging these things around is a bit of a pain. So then there's also PodPress feed buttons, which I want to drag up there into here. And yeah, there's several settings here. So one thing you might want is to have this little iTunes button show up as part of the widget. So that's clicked by default. This next setting is important. There's two ways you can have the iTunes button work. One is it can take you to the iTunes website where in order for that to work, you have to put in your iTunes ID on the configuration screen. And as I said, right now we haven't registered this podcast, so we don't have an iTunes ID for it yet. So what we'll do instead is we'll click this button, and that says to use the iTunes protocol, which instead of taking you to the iTunes website, will actually launch iTunes and take you directly to the feed that you're setting up here. And so, of course, we want a podcast feed set up, and there's all kinds of other things you can do. But we don't need to worry about those. So let's just save what we did change. And, I just wanted to show you one more little useful widget. There's one called text, which it says arbitrary text or HTML. So it's actually a useful little widget. So I'm going to put it down here. And it basically just gives you a little window where you can type in arbitrary HTML. So for instance, I may want to have a link back to... Yeah, I'll put that triple W prominently displayed there. That WordPress. And might want to do something like just have our mug logo and have it link back to the mug homepage. So... Don't ask me how I remember that.
How do you remember that? You
said not to ask him, sir.
And you can do stuff like that.
Is your
Sorry.
Do you have to close your image tag?
No, I did.
Not if he's in relaxed rendering mode.
I should have a slash there, is what you're saying, right? Yeah, okay. And I might also want border. Border equals zero?
Yeah.
Okay. Does it have to be in quotes?
I think so.
Okay. Again, depends on how strict your...
Doesn't have to be in quotes, except for the browser's the break.
Okay. So, let's see what this now looks like. So, this much is the same as before, and this we already looked at. So, there's our little logo, and you can see we even get the little pop-up tag. And here's our podcast player, which looks something like this. And there's our calendar, showing Sunday at the start of the week, not Monday. And there's our little... podcast feed things and RSS feed. Let's just take a look at what this looks like. Oh, it's even got our little graphic, but there's nothing in there yet. So I think we're now finally at the point where we can post and call this meeting to a close. So let's post. Add a new post. All right. My first. For some reason.
Yeah, so it's a bit of an issue with WordPress and column placement.
CSS magic, yay.
Yeah.
It's typing in behind
it. Yeah, it
CSS
is.
CSS absolutely.
If I had a bigger screen, that would look correct.
zooming out.
You can type blind.
Yep.
Can't you reduce the scale of the stuff?
Just zoom out.
So, I just wanted to get some text in there. The main thing I wanted to show you here is there's this little PodPress section here, which is where you add your media files. And so you have a location, which conveniently it remembers from last time, and the title.
And
what's that?
I was actually kind of expecting to see the upload button there, rather than having to give it a URL.
I just want to make sure I got the path right, because, yes, that is the one I wanted. Okay, and then there's the file size and duration. It's got these fields, but you can actually have it auto-detect it. And that's actually a good test to make sure that you've typed your path in correctly and that it's actually finding the file. And likewise here, for the duration, we can have it auto-detect. That takes a little longer. It has to go looking through the file. Yeah.
Yeah, you can actually upload them
in
the media section on the left-hand side.
And you can actually examine your ID3 tags just to make sure you've got the right file, if you happen to have ID3 tags.
Oh, if the file is remote. So you can have these media files be inside the WordPress.
And sure enough, I did have the right file. The cover art here, that's not what it is, actually. It's just showing that as kind of a default, because that particular MP3 file didn't have an icon in it. So, once we've got that set up, we can go over here and we can just publish the sucker. Okay. Now, let's just take a look at our dashboard, and we'll see that it's been updated to show there's a new post there. And let's take a look at our site. And there it is. Oh, I typed from twice. Anyway, so here's it. Has this little flash player that it embeds in there.
A lot of you probably know something about podcasts.
You probably don't hear that all the way back there, but there's Brian Duke speaking from the main meeting. And there's also this little podcast player. If you have multiple segments, this player here would only play each of the segments that you had. But the one over here, since it uses a playlist, it's actually loading a playlist that's dynamically generated from the feed, and if you had multiple segments, you could actually skip through them and listen to all of your podcast segments right there.
I've been listening to podcasts for...
Anyway. And, oh yeah, just one other thing I wanted to show you is if we look at our RSS feed right now, we'll see. Oh, okay. There's the posting, and there's the media file. So it's all there, and I won't bother showing you the iTunes thing. So that's pretty much all I had. Are there any questions?
Thank you, a great blogger.
I don't know whether I should thank you or not for that comment. Oh, speaking of... Speaking of comments, if you do set up this software and you do enable comments, make sure you look into some plugins for anti-spam. because you are likely, as soon as the URL for that is published, you are likely to get spam sites.
That comes automatically. That's what it's for.
The Kismet? Yeah, there's that one.
That's one of the ones that...
Yeah, there's another one called Bad Behavior, and there's tons of them. If you look for anti-spam, you'll find tons of them.
A lot of them, they will put a CAPTCHA.
There are other plugins to do CAPTCHAs. There are things called anti-CAPTCHAs, which kind of work automatically using some JavaScript magic and things like that. So there's tons of plugins. There's huge amounts of functionality, and I've really only scratched the surface here.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more MUG meeting summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at www.mug.mb.ca.